and welcome to Wait, For Real?
A true crime and paranormal podcast. I'm Grace.
And I'm Katie.
And we're back for another week of chaotic fun.
That's right.
So what are we doing today, Katie? What are we covering? What's the sitch?
Well, as everyone knows by now, I'm sure, OJ Simpson passed away on April 10th.
Dead.
He's dead. Like, he died from prostate cancer.
He had prostate cancer?
Yeah.
Oh. I knew it was cancer. I just didn't know what type.
Yep.
He was like...
Yeah. So now we're going to cover.
So we're not even doing true crime news because I guess this is the true crime news.
Technically, yeah. So we're going to go over the OJ Simpson trial, which is the case of Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman, their murders.
Are you going to talk about like OJ as a person? Like give
very
us a round.
Briefly,
okay.
Very briefly. I think it's hard because. If you've seen the documentaries, if you were alive when this happened, I mean, we were alive, but we were just
young bebes.
Actually,
we weren't alive for all of it.
In the trial, 1995.
Well, yeah, we were in for the trial,
but we were one. So the point is,
outing our age like that, damn. Yeah.
That a lot of it really centered around who OJ was as a person. And so I want to kind of shift the narrative back to Nicole and Ron,
which I respect 100%.
I will cover who he is.
Yeah,
briefly,
obviously.
Very briefly, but.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I feel like a lot of people know the highlight reel of like right. OJ Simpson, but it's going to be interesting to see how the trial breaks down and things like that.
And so. If you want to add in more stuff about OJ Simpson and his career, then you're welcome to.
I'm just going
to
make it up as I go. No, I'm kidding. Okay. Fact check me, guys. Don't, actually.
Yeah, please don't.
Everything I do is a lie.
That is not true.
I try sometimes.
You know a little bit about this case.
I do, actually.
But... So this will be more of a conversation.
Oh my gosh. Before we get started on this, though, I do need to call you out for something.
Why?
You sent me an Instagram.
TikTok.
TikTok that killed me. I was like, I like had a full 5 minutes where I was like, am I the problem?
No, you're not like that. But listen, I just thought it was funny.
It hurt my soul.
Oh, no, did it really? I was like, no, I thought I could say you things if you knew they were a joke.
She sent me, it was actually pretty funny. She sent me this TikTok and it was like these two girls doing a podcast, like mimicking a podcast. And
it
the
was
second
one girl doing it, but
well,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she kept interjecting to be like, well, what's his name? And you'd be like, I'm going to get to that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they'd be like, and stabbed her. And you're like, well, stabbed her where?
Yeah.
I'm going to fucking get to that. Like, and I'm like, oh my God, that's me. Like, I literally, think... Katie will be in the middle of something. I'll be like, hey, Katie, what's your thoughts on this? What? Who?
I'm like, that's actually the end of my sentence. So if you just hold the fuck on. No, I think a lot of other podcasts have second people that may be more like that, that are like always. And I think that's the purpose, right? I think it's
so
to move
funny
the conversation along.
It's
but...
so funny. Anyways, yeah, that's me. That's what I bring to the table, guys.
That's not true. We have good conversations. You have good questions.
Yeah, sometimes.
Most of the time, I have to look them up because I didn't think about it beforehand.
Well, we learned so much about asbestos. Was that last week?
Yeah.
Yeah, and TB.
Yeah.
I learned so much. Speaking of, I'm sorry. I'm so off topic already, but that's just me as a person. Last week's episode, which we covered, was the Sunland Hotel. Nope.
The
hospital.
Sunland Hospital, yeah.
Not a hotel. So my friend has actually been to the Sunland Hospital.
That's wild.
Before. So, you know, like we talked about how there was two huge, like there's the huge, huge hospital building that was torn down quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
And then there was like the second brick building that
yes.
we thought was still there,
the
but it's not.
The administration building.
Yeah. So she actually went with a group of friends back in college and they like walked around the administration building and stuff.
Did she think it was haunted?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Okay.
That she said right. that there was like a swing set next to the building.
Yeah, because it's the playground.
Yeah. And you can see the swings swinging by themselves.
Fuck that.
Yeah. She said that was like a group of them that went like just for funsies in college.
At night?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Middle of the night. I'm like, you're a monster.
That's scary.
I can't imagine doing that. And I was like, would you do that now? And they're like, hell no, I wouldn't do that now.
No.
I'm like, yeah, exactly. You had some bad juju up in there.
I might, honestly.
You're going to go to this?
No, I'm not going to. But I'm saying like if it were a different haunted location, I might go.
I need daytime. I need the lights on.
You know
on.
What? Ever since the Manresa, I'm pretty sure that you're game for more than you are willing to
actually,
admit.
That's fair. I'm like, you know what? Let's do it for the views.
Yeah.
Okay, I will shut up now so we can talk about O.J. Simpson.
And this is a long, it's going to be a long one.
Okay, I'm ready.
You've been warned.
Sit down, guys, buckle up, get a snack.
That's right. Just going to dive right in, okay?
All right.
June 1977, Nicole Brown moves to L.A. to be a photographer.
Okay.
From Garden Grove, which is just south of Los Angeles.
Okay.
Her sister Tanya explained that she always wanted to be a photographer. She just loved capturing moments on film.
Okay.
And so that's why she went to L.A. She was 18 at the time.
Young bebe.
She starts working as a waitress at the Daisy, which is a hot spot in L.A. During the day, it's a restaurant. And then at night, it's like a discotheque.
A lot of places are like that over there. Yes. Now. Okay.
And this is where she meets O.J. Simpson. Ooh. In 1977, so shortly after she moves out
there. So she's literally 18.
Yeah.
Okay.
When she met him, she didn't know that he was an athlete or a football player. And he approached her at the restaurant, and everyone in documentaries and as you hear about O.J. Simpson, they talk about how charismatic he was and basically that she was just drawn to him.
Okay.
At the time, OJ is about 28 or 29. She's 18. And he's married.
Oh.
Yes. At the time, he's married to his first wife, Marguerite Whitley.
Okay.
Who he has been married to for 10 years since 1967.
So he was only 19 when he got married.
Yeah, so he was young.
Jeez. I guess back in the day, that's what you did.
Not long after OJ meets Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
He and his wife divorce in 1979.
So like 2 years.
Right. But Nicole was okay with the fact that he was married when they started dating.
Yeah.
He like got an apartment for her and bought her a car.
Wow.
And he had, O.J. Simpson had 3 kids with Marguerite.
Right.
In 1979, the youngest child, Erin, she was just 1 year old, and she died. She drowned.
What?
Yeah.
I did really not know sad. This.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, I don't know the reason for divorce or any information on the marriage itself.
Okay. Is that person still alive? What's her name? Marguerite?
Marguerite. That is a good question. I think yes, but let me double check.
Look at me asking a good question and not a dumb one.
I'm never going to look down that TikTok. I knew
never.
It was. Marguerite Whitley is still alive.
Okay.
And
good to know.
Living in California.
Okay.
So after the divorce, he moves Nicole in. And in 1985, the two are married.
Okay.
Tanya, which is Nicole's younger sister.
Mm-hmm.
She also has an older sister named Denise. Tanya and friends spoke about how the marriage seemed great on the outside, and they would often have people over to the house, that Nicole was a really great hostess, and OJ was, again, very charming, kind, and warm.
Yeah, I think he was always known as, like, very outgoing and charismatic.
Yes, very
much
so.
And I've heard that she also was, like, very welcoming and,
yes.
like, just an all-around, like, good person to have for, like you said, hosting parties.
Right. October 1985, their daughter Sydney is born. Nicole always wanted to be a mom, so she was very Aww. Excited about this, and she loved Sydney very much. And then in August of 1988, OJ and Nicole welcomed their second child, Justin.
That's awesome.
Tanya said that she loved being a mom and that she really thrived and she was very involved in the kids' lives.
Right.
Seemingly until 1992, outsiders believed that their marriage was normal.
Right.
And then in 1992, Nicole divorces OJ.
Okay.
They will try to reconcile about a year later, but we'll kind of get into that as we go down the line.
Okay.
We're going to move forward now to June 12th, 1994, and the events that led to Nicole being murdered.
Okay.
On the evening of June 12th, the family goes to Sydney's dance recital. The family is there. So Denise is there. Nicole's mom is there.
Tanya.
Tanya's there. OJ's there.
Okay.
Everybody's there to see the dance recital. Justin's there, obviously. At 6:30, the family and some of the girls go to a restaurant called Mezzaluna for dinner. And this is a big deal because it's the first time that OJ is not allowed to come to a family event with her family.
Oh, like she said, like...
So they say, like, no, you can't come.
Like, you can't come to dinner. Got it.
And Tanya recalls that he was upset about this. At 8 p.m., Nicole and her children leave Mezzaluna and stop for ice cream on the way home.
AKA the best mom.
Yes. Love that. 9:48 to 9:50. Oh, before this, Denise calls the restaurant because her mom left glasses, a pair of glasses there.
Okay.
And they confirm, yes, the glasses are here.
Yep.
Now, the waiter at the restaurant, Ron Goldman, knew Nicole and said, I'll just drop them by her house on the way home.
Right.
At 9:48 to 9:50, Ron leaves the restaurant. He has the glasses in a white envelope. At 10:15, while watching television, Pablo Finnevs, which is a neighbor to Nicole, hears the cries and constant barking of a dog.
Okay.
12:09 to 12:10, police are called to Nicole's house or townhouse on Bundy after Pablo Finnevs sees her body lying near the gate of her condominium.
Okay.
The first police officer to arrive at the condominium said that the master bedroom, because they go inside the house, right? So Nicole and Ron are found outside in front of the door. And then he goes into the house to make sure there's nobody else that's in there or that needs help or assistance.
Right.
The master bath has candles lit everywhere and it's full. The bath is full. There's ice cream out that had melted, and both her kids are sleeping in the home.
Okay.
And they apparently slept through the whole thing.
Where's the sisters?
They're not there.
Okay.
They don't live there.
They all went home.
Yeah. Okay. They all went to their own homes. They take the kids out and they take them to the police station. They don't tell them what happened. I assume they go out a different way.
Right.
Nicole was found sprawled on the sidewalk outside, stabbed multiple times, along with Ron Goldman, who was just 26 at the time. She had been stabbed 12 times, and Ron had been stabbed 25 times. The most brutal detail was that she was killed by having her throat cut. It was about a 5.5-inch slit, and it was so deep that it left a mark on her vertebrae, basically,
right,
to the point of almost decapitating her.
Right.
Officers would describe the blood as a pool of blood beneath her body, but if you have seen the crime scene images, that's way more than a pool, in my opinion. There's blood everywhere.
Yeah, it's literally everywhere.
Other important evidence that's found at the scene are the bloody footprints that are seen going away from the bodies.
House. Yeah.
As well as drops of blood and a left glove.
A left hand glove.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is an extra large men's leather glove. Just the left hand has blood on it as well. At this point, I want to take a minute to talk about Ron because I really think that he gets left out a lot.
Yeah, 100%.
Ron had one sister, Kim, and was raised primarily by his father after his parents divorced in the 70s.
Okay.
Ron went to Illinois State University. He lived outside of Chicago for a year before dropping out and moving to California in the late 1980s. He worked a few jobs as he was trying to find himself, which is so understandable. He worked as a tennis instructor and as a waiter at Mezzaluna, and he wanted to one day own his own restaurant.
That's awesome.
He wasn't incredibly close with Nicole. Like, they weren't, like, BFFs.
Yeah, but almost like she was a regular type situation.
They were acquaintances. Apparently, she would let him drive her Ferrari.
Okay.
From time to time. But I just feel like they never really talk about what they think happened. You know what I mean? Like, in most documentaries, they don't talk about, okay, well, Nicole must have come outside and Ron must have come after. And, you know, that's not discussed. It's so focused on OJ.
Right.
I think it's a situation of wrong place, wrong time.
100%. He went to drop off the glasses and happened to be caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, which is very sad. Going back to the scene. So at this time, detectives have arrived on scene and around 5 a.m., they're like, we should go find OJ because they don't know if he's also in danger. And he lives just a few minutes down the street.
Okay.
So they drive on over. They also think, like, he needs to be notified. Like,
yeah,
someone needs to come get the kids. Like,
yeah.
It's a whole thing. So they drive over to OJ's and attempt to get the attention of anyone inside the house. So there's, like, a gate in front of it. So they're trying to, like, buzz in, like, get anyone's attention. And it's just not happening. Nobody's
answering.
Responding.
Right. It's also 5 a.m.
Right. And this is when police notice a white Ford Bronco that's parked outside the home, and it's parallel to the curb. So, like, directly in front of the house.
Yeah, like, just parallel parked.
Right.
When you said parallel to the curb, I, like, had a moment where I was like, what is that?
I did, too, when I was first doing it. They see a small reddish-brown stain near the door handle, and then they notice in the driveway that there are drops of blood. And this kind of leads them to climb over the wall.
Because they think, at this point, I'm assuming that he's hurt.
They just don't know. They're like, we have no idea. Like, we need to go and make sure that everything's okay.
Right.
They climb over the wall.
That's a lot of work.
And they follow the blood drops, and this is where they find the second extra large men's leather glove belonging to the right hand. And this does have some blood on it as well. Now, this is also near the guest house. So at this point, it's reported that they go and wake up Arnell, which is OJ's daughter, who's staying in the house or near the guest house.
Okay.
And she calls his assistant.
Okay.
Right. So now they know that OJ is not in the house.
Right.
He's in Chicago.
Right.
And he is staying at the Chicago O'Hare Plaza Hotel. So they call him.
They're like, and, hey, bro.
Yeah. They're like, we have some bad news. And they tell him and they say, you need to come back for, we need to talk to you.
Yeah. And also your kids.
And he comes back really quickly, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
While they're interviewing him, they notice a cut on his left middle finger that is fresh. Even when you see the pictures of it from that, you can tell this is a fresh cut.
Right.
When they ask him about it, if you've listened to this interview before, very bizarre. He's like, I don't know. I guess I like cut it on a glass in the hotel room. And then he's saying, okay, no, I actually cut it before that. And then I must have just reopened it. Like, I was really upset when you guys called and told me about this. Just really dodgy about it.
Yeah. Like, and not the brightest bulb.
They're telling him, okay, we have a problem because there's blood on the Bronco. There's blood drops in your driveway. And he's like, so what? You want my blood? Like, take my blood. And they're like, yeah, we will.
Like, bitch, we are.
Yeah. They take his DNA and they let him go. But the evidence quickly begins to pile up against him. Forensics would confirm that the glove found on his property matched DNA from him and both of the victims. The blood droplets are matching him. And so on June 17th, just 5 days after Nicole and Ron were killed, police issue a warrant for his arrest. Now, let's pause for a second. Because
yes.
Where has OJ been this whole time? You know? Yes. He can't stay at his home. The media is going crazy, like bonkers about this.
Yeah, this was, I mean, the trial of the century.
Right. So he's at the Kardashians, Robert Kardashian and Chris Kardashian at the time, their house. Because he's okay. Like, why don't you come and stay with me? Like, you don't need to be there.
Hide out. Like,
just... he's friend. They're friends.
Yes. Yes.
He will obviously eventually be on the defense team.
And also, Chris was friends with
Nicole.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's probably there to mourn in a way. Well, Chris is
mourning. Right. Well, so was Robert. And he wrote a book. You can look up his interviews and all that. But when this happens, right, because they're like, okay, we're going to come to the Kardashians' house and we're going to just hand him over. Like, this is going to be a peaceful thing. It doesn't need to be a big deal.
Right.
So before we get to the infamous car chase, or car crawl, as I like to call it.
The car crawl! Oh my god, that's amazing!
Before we continue, I am going to place a trigger warning for suicide. This kind of goes into the car chase and what I'm going to talk about right now. So if you don't want to hear about this, I would go forward probably like 2 to 3 minutes.
Okay.
Robert Kardashian would later recall that after he learns about the warrant, OJ learns about the warrant, he's standing in his daughter's bedroom and
who's
Robert Kardashian's daughter's bedroom.
Okay. Saying, do we know who?
I don't know for sure who it was.
Oh, okay.
And I don't want to just guess.
Yeah, no.
Saying he has a gun, saying threatening to complete suicide.
Okay.
And Robert tells him, like, you can't do that. This is my daughter's bedroom. Every time I come into this room, I'm going to just, like, see your body. So then he goes out.
It's also a little selfish to say that.
What?
like for Robert to be like, don't do it in this room. Like, I'm gonna,
I mean,
like,
don't do it in his daughter's room.
But also, so don't fucked. Do it.
Well, yeah, like, but I'm, he's just trying to like get him down.
Yeah.
Right. And so then he goes out by the garbage cans, this whole thing, like this.
Yeah.
And he says, don't do it. Like, you don't want to die in the trash. Then he says he's going to do it like by the wall. And he's like, don't do it. I'll look up my living room and always think of you. And
yeah.
Well, eventually this leads to him leaving, allegedly without Robert Kardashian knowing. Because the police come and they're like, okay, like, we're here to collect.
Like, hello. OJ. Yeah.
And so he says he's going up the stairs saying, OJ, OJ, calling his name. And he's like, nowhere to be found.
Okay. Don't be suspicious.
Right. Police identify the same Ford, white Ford Bronco that had been parked in front of his home.
Yes.
On the 405.
Which is the major highway.
Correct. And this is when they begin to pursue. This is so notorious. He's really not going that fast. Also, if you didn't know, the Bronco didn't belong to O.J. Simpson. The Bronco belonged to A.C. or Al Collings, who...
Al was driving.
Sorry, Al Collings. Yeah, he was driving. So he...
Yeah.
He... I really did not get into what O.J. Simpson, what his career was. But Al, or A.C., as he goes by... played with O.J. Simpson on the Buffalo Bills, and football. He also grew up with O.J. Yes. Simpson.
Right.
Now, it's his Bronco. He calls 911 after they're driving and police are chasing them, and you should listen to him. He sounds panicked. He's, yes. like, screaming in the thing, saying, like, this is A.C., and the person's like, who is this? And he's like, you know who I am. This is Al Collings. Like, saying, like, I am driving the white Ford Bronco. O.J. Right. Simpson is in the back of the seat. He has a gun. Right. Now, while there's seems to be a lot of confusion on if the gun was pointed at A.C. or O.J., it seems pretty definitive that it was always pointed at O.J.
Right, because he was thinking about completing suicide.
Right. And A.C. says on the call, he just wants to see his mom. Just tell the police to back off. Tell the police to back off.
Right.
Now, OJ would say he wants to go to Nicole's grave and complete suicide there, or he wants to go to his house and complete suicide there. While he's in the car, he calls Nicole's dad. Tanya would later recall this and say, yeah, he called and their dad just said, like, please don't do this. Think about your kids. They need mm-hmm. you. And a lot of emphasis was placed on the kids and minimizing the exposure to them and just the damage that would do to them. Like, now right. they don't have either parent.
Right. So can we stop for a second here? I want to, how did AC get in the car?
He left, like, they left together.
So he was also at the Kardashians' house.
I don't know if he was there or if he picked him up. There's That's not what I was a lot wondering. Of information okay. regarding
Yeah.
That.
Because I think whenever we, if you listen to this, like, you might be confused a little bit. So basically, he left the Kardashians. Some way, somehow, AC got in the car and was driving the vehicle. AC was driving with OJ in the backseat.
Right. And okay. OJ had a gun to his own head Correct. During this whole thing.
Sorry. I just wanted to clear that up a little bit.
And this lasts for hours. They're not slowest, just driving on the 405. They also.
Slowest car chase ever.
Eventually go to Sunset. And so. What's crazier is that thousands of people are along the side of the highway on the overpasses, really cheering OJ on, saying, go, OJ, go. And also, I think, this is just my opinion, I think it's hard to see when you're looking into the car from the footage. Like, I think that's why there was a lot of confusion on whose car it was and who was driving.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it eventually ends by AC pulling into the driveway of OJ's home.
Okay.
And this leads to a 45-minute standoff with him basically not wanting to come out of the car, OJ.
Right.
At the same time, Jason, his son, shows up, tries to, like, get to his dad, basically.
They, How old they is arrest he then? Him. Do we know?
Let me see.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Old enough. In 1994, Jason was 24.
Okay, so he's like an adult, and he's yes. like basically like, Dad, what are you doing?
Yeah. And so police arrest him, because they're like, you can't do that. And eventually, OJ will agree to give himself up.
Well, I mean, yeah, they got him.
Yeah.
Got him.
Now we're going to fast forward to the trial.
Okay.
Which happens beginning January 24th, 1995.
Which is shocking that it was so fast.
Yeah.
Given the fact that now we know how long these things take, but.
Right. I think a lot of that was like media pressure, and it was arrogance on the behalf of the prosecution.
Yep.
The defense team would also later say that they kind of like tried to hoodwink the prosecution by pretending that they weren't ready for trial. So like when they went to a pretrial conference and prosecution says ready for trial, they thought that defense was going to say not ready, and defense said we're ready. And Robert Shapiro would later say like it really wrecked her, one of the prosecutors. You could see just the color drain from right. her face. Now we're going to go back to June 12th, and I'm going to talk about what was going on with OJ at the same time as Nicole's timeline.
Okay.
So now we're going back. We're going to 9 p.m.
Yes.
9 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Cato Kalin, whose first name is Brian but goes by Cato, lived in the guest house.
At OJ's. Simpson's house. Yes.
So Cato and OJ go to McDonald's for dinner between 9 and 9:30.
Yummy.
Yes. 9:45, Cato and OJ return home. At 10:25, limousine driver Alan Park arrives at OJ's house. He's there to pick him up for the airport.
Right.
10:40, Cato hears three loud thumps on an outside wall of his room.
Okay.
And remember, the glove is found near Cato, the Correct. Guest house, which is where Cato Correct. Is staying. 10:40 to 10:50. Alan Park buzzes the intercom several times because OJ still's not come out.
Right.
And he's not getting any response. At 10:55, Alan Park calls his boss and tells him that OJ Simpson is not home. And he's told that he needs to wait until 11:15 since OJ is chronically late.
Mm.
Shortly before 11 p.m., Alan sees a black person, 6 foot, 200 pounds, walking across the driveway. And at first, he can't really tell who it is.
Right.
About 11 p.m., Cato goes to the front of the house to check on the noise that he had been hearing.
Mm-hmm.
He sees the limousine driver at the gate, and several seconds later, Alan again buzzes the intercom and OJ answers. He says he had overslept and he just got out of the shower.
Okay.
11 p.m. to 11:15 p.m., OJ puts his bags in the limousine. 11:15, the limousine leaves for Los Angeles Airport. And at 11:35 p.m., the limousine arrives at the airport. By 11:45, OJ leaves on an American airline flight to Chicago. That's a real shock. He only needed 10 minutes.
He also took commercial.
It's probably first class. That's what it said.
That's surprising. American Air. Yeah, he only had to go 10 minutes through freaking security.
It's pre 9/11.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I wouldn't have even clicked.
Yeah.
Like, it only took 10 minutes. Wow. Jeez, Grace, breathe a room.
I mean, I thought the same thing, and I was like, wait, okay, think of the times. The first several months of the prosecution's argument, they focus on domestic violence. And this is when it comes out, and it really seems to shock everybody, especially Nicole's family.
Right.
I'm going to talk about two major instances of domestic violence. Okay. Really, the two only instances the cops fully get involved.
Right.
January 1st, 1989, Nicole Brown calls 911 to report an incident of domestic violence. This call occurred during the early morning hours after a New Year's Eve party at their home in Brentwood. So they're still living together. This is before Correct. They divorce. The officer reported that Nicole comes running out of the bush. So the officer gets there, and at first, the housekeeper at the house says, like, no, everything's fine. Like, we don't need police.
Right.
But this time, the police officers are like, no, we need to see her. She was frantic. I need to see her.
Yeah, and which you should have to do.
Right. And she comes running out of the bushes. She's hiding in there.
Oh, okay.
She's screaming, he's going to kill me. He's going to kill me. According to reports, OJ had punched and kicked her and pulled her hair and screamed, I'll kill you. He had slapped her so hard, one police report said that a handprint was left on her neck.
Jesus.
I'm surprised at how much information is twisted in like articles that you read, because mm-hmm. and it just really is so hard to pull all of this information. But 4 months later, Simpson pled no contest to spousal battery.
What's that mean?
It's like domestic.
Like abuse. No contest.
Oh, it means that you're saying, it's also known as an Alfred plea. So you can say, I'm guilty, I'm not guilty, or I plead no contest. No contest is basically saying, okay, so the prosecution can probably find me guilty, but I'm just going to say, like, I'm not going to, like, disagree, but I'm also not necessarily saying, okay, I'm guilty.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
This is a really big deal because the municipal judge, Ronald Schoenberg, overruled the prosecution's request. The prosecution said that he should serve a month in jail because of the severity of the beating and undergo an intensive year-long treatment program for men who batter their wives. Instead, the judge overrules this and says no jail time and allows OJ to pick the psychiatrist that he will not only see, but he will only be doing it over the phone.
What a scam.
Yep.
Was that, you said it was a judge that did this?
It was the judge, yeah.
Is the judge still in, like, who's this dude?
I have no idea.
Or dudette.
It's a guy.
Hmm. Anyways, sorry, continue.
I would probably assume not.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it was a long time ago.
Yeah. But. October 25th, 1993. Nicole again calls 911. And this is when they're trying to reconcile.
Right.
In 1993. So after she divorces him, it's reported that she has regrets. She wants her family to be together. She wants her kids to grow up in a house with both mom and dad.
Right.
And they're trying to reconcile. But when they were separated, she was seeing other people.
Mm-hmm.
And OJ really hated this. On October 25th, she calls 911. And it's about 3 a.m. And it was reported that OJ Simpson had broken down her door and physically assaulted her. Now, when you read the transcripts, he has not touched her yet. She's basically calling my ex-husband. He's out here. He's yelling. He's screaming. He's...
like, gonna break in,
he does break down the door. He does get into the house. She locks herself upstairs. She says on the phone, like, I don't want to go to where my kids are. Like, I want them to be safe. And she's, like, saying, OJ, the kids. Trigger warning. I'm going to use some intense language here. She says, OJ, the kids are sleeping. And he says, the kids are sleeping. I'm paraphrasing. The kids are sleeping when you were sucking Blaz dick, whoever the guy is.
Right.
The kids were sleeping and you didn't think about it. You know, whatever. He's screaming at her. Back to the 1989 call really quick.
Yeah.
In this one, actually, they both say it. So OJ says, you guys have come out here 8 times and never done anything. Like, this is a problem between us and you should leave, basically.
What the fuck?
But so it is stated that the police had been called.
Multiple times.
8 times before. Going back to 1993, I believe that they arrest him at this time. And after this happens, Nicole begins to save evidence. So she opens a safe deposit box, and in there she keeps photographs of her bruises and her swollen face.
Which is so sad, because you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
They're just, ugh. Yeah, anyways.
She also kept a diary tracking OJ's alleged stalking and letters of apology that he had written to her. She also wrote letters to him, and one such letter obtained by law enforcement, Nicole referred to an incident in 1986. Quote, you beat the holy hell out of me and we lied at the x-ray lab and said I fell off a bike, unquote. She told her mother after the couple's divorce in 1992 that OJ had been following her. Quote, I go to the gas station, he's there. I go to Payless shoe store and he's there. I'm driving and he's behind me, unquote.
That's so messed up.
Yeah. So this had been going on for a long time. Her diary was not allowed into evidence. A lot of it just wasn't allowed into evidence.
Why?
At the time. I don't know.
Oh,
it just
okay.
was. It just wasn't. And it's reported in the documentary that I watched where her sister is kind of going through everything that she talks about being beaten up to 60 times.
Jesus.
Over the course of like their... And she never said anything to like her friends, her family. There were only a few people that she confided in,
which
including
is so sad.
A friend that was friends with her and OJ.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just really sad. He talks about in the documentary how he was so shocked that that happened and how when OJ said that he would never touch her again, he believed her.
Mm-hmm.
So after they go through all of this domestic
BS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to shift their focus to the the forensic evidence. Now, before we get into that, one of the jurors, well, ex-jurors, but came out and said, you know, like, just because he was abusing his wife doesn't mean he killed her.
What a prick.
So there was a bit, really big division on people that, a lot of people think that, no, everybody just thought he was guilty, and that just is not the case. I think 60% of Black individuals thought that he was innocent. This did become a very big race thing, and I do think that that is a very important thing to talk about, which we're going to get into when we get into the defense's strategy. It just sucks. Like, the LAPD was so corrupt at this time. It just is horrible.
Most police officers.
Yeah, but especially LAPD. Precincts.
Yeah. Is that the word, precinct?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Some people have precincts or offices or...
groups. Gangs.
Gangs.
Couple of bros.
Yeah. Going to the forensic evidence.
Yes.
This includes blood evidence, specifically talking about how the likelihood that the blood droplets belong to OJ is just significantly high.
Mm-hmm.
However... reporters that were in the courtroom think that this just really went like way over the heads. It was just too technical. They just,
like, it was just the narrative was told incorrectly.
It wasn't that it was incorrect. It's just that maybe they weren't able to understand all of it. I think when you're using very technical terms, the story kind of gets
less
lost.
Yeah. No, I get that.
Next. Before the prosecution rests, this is the kicker, right? Prosecution asks OJ Simpson to try on the gloves.
Oh my God, the fucking glove.
Let's talk about this for a second. So, I believe it's Robert Shapiro who talks about this later in an interview.
Okay.
10 out of 10 on the defense. Like, this defense was, they were ruthless. This team was very ruthless.
They were very good at what they did.
Now, Robert Shapiro was the lead defense attorney, but it's Johnny Cochran who is the one that presents mostly during trial.
Right.
Robert Shapiro remembers looking at the glove and saying, that wouldn't fit my hand. It's not going to fit OJ Simpson. So he basically, like, knew that this prosecutor was
really
sensitive.
Yeah. What?
Knew that he was sensitive. He had a sensitive ego.
Oh,
and so he said, like, you have no balls in court. Basically, like, edged him on to say, like, you, and he said, you should have OJ Simpson try on the gloves if you're that confident. And if you don't, I, like, the defense will. And so what does the prosecution do at the very end?
Tell him to put on the glove.
They ask him to put on the glove. Now, of course, the defense knows that that's going to work. And so they had told OJ ahead of time, when you put these on, like, make it, you know, turn it into a big show.
Yeah, make it an event.
Now, if you haven't seen this footage, I really think you should go watch it because, yeah, the gloves are tight, but I don't really know that I buy, like, oh, well, they don't fit. Like, first off, he's wearing latex gloves. This is my opinion, okay? Don't come for me or do, I don't care. He's wearing latex gloves. When he puts them on, he has his fingers spread out, right? He's not, like, really trying. He, like,
puts his hand in a weird formation.
Yes, he says the defense told him to hold it. Put on the glove and pretend like he's holding the Olympic torch.
But, like, it almost, I don't know, it just looks so stupid.
Right. So,
also,
and it comes to about almost the end of his palm, you know, the glove. So, it's not like he couldn't get it past his fingers. I'm not saying that the glove isn't tight or that there wasn't shrinkage or whatever.
Yeah.
This was a really fucking dumb move by the prosecution. That was really stupid. Yeah, well, the prosecution
really had a rough go there.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a minute.
Wait, so did you also, I don't know, I saw it in one of the articles that came out that they were saying that the defense told him to stop taking his arthritis medication. Did you hear about this?
No.
So they, I don't, okay, please somebody fact check me if I'm wrong, but it was in one of the articles I read after he had passed. They were saying that he had told OJ to stop taking his arthritis medication 3 days before trial so his hands would cramp up easier and it would be harder for him to maneuver them into the glove.
I believe that.
Yeah. I mean, the defense was very good at their job.
Yeah, they were.
Okay. Anyways, we continue.
Now, this was not the...
the fucking glove. Oh, my God.
Yeah. This is not what the prosecution had anticipated.
Shocking.
Moving on. prosecution wraps it up, okay? This takes about like 5.5 months for them to get through all of their arguments, all of their witnesses. And now it's the defense's turn. Remember that the burden of proof is on the prosecution. It's right. not the defense's job to prove that he didn't do it. It's the prosecution's prove. Job that he to prove that he did do it.
Right. And they're supposed to, you always say it really well. It's like that without a shit.
Defense is just trying to plant reasonable doubt.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm like, doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop.
The defense really focuses on tearing apart the prosecution's case. Basically saying, starting off by saying, well, all of this evidence from this case goes through the LAPD, right? Their focus is that LAPD is corrupt, which is yep. true.
Yeah. And they're like, why not lean into it?
And they prove it, right? The biggest blow comes from cross-examination of Detective Mark Furman. Mark Furman is on the stand.
Okay.
And Robert Shapiro would later say, like, this was my goal to get him to basically say, no, I've never said anything racist under oath, right? Oh, God. So he's under oath and he's like, have you ever used the N-word?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no. He's very common. He's like, no. Asks him several different ways.
Yeah.
Okay, have you ever done it in regards to suspects, in regards to other officers?
I'm so afraid to be on the stand solely for this type of mindset.
You only need to be afraid if you've done something wrong.
Oh, true. I just feel like I'm going to look dumb.
So they ask him over and over and over again. He says, no, no, no. So he steps down and they bring their next witness, which is someone that had been working with Mark Furman and had a recording of him using the N-word up to 40 times.
What?
Yes. Really horrible things that he was saying.
Holy crap. I didn't know that.
This is a big deal.
Yeah.
Because he is racist. And they just proved not only is he racist, he lied about it.
Can't you? Isn't that perjury?
Yeah, but I think he ends up being like removed from the force and like, okay. stuff like that. But I don't know that if he's held in like contempt or for perjury. I have right. no idea. And one court reporter that was in the courtroom would say like they could have ended the trial right there because that was enough to convince.
Yeah. Reasonable doubt.
Because now what do they say? Well, that's a detective. That's a detective that climbed the wall, that went over the wall and found the second glove. So how do we know you didn't plant that glove?
Damn.
And it's not about if he did or didn't. It's about saying, well, it is possible.
Yeah.
And thus you have reasonable doubt.
Damn.
Now, through all of this, this is where the famous line comes from Robert Shapiro, who says, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yes.
October 3rd, 1995. So it takes about 9 months in total to get through all the evidence.
Right.
The trial comes to an end. And this is what's crazy, right? You spend 9 months them laying out this evidence and the jury takes 3 hours to deliberate before coming back.
Wait, were they sequestered for all 9 months?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Holy shit, though. That's a long ass time.
That's a very
Your
long time.
Your job
trial.
Gone.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Oh, my gosh.
And they come back with a not guilty verdict, and O.J. Simpson is famously acquitted.
Which is, like, the moment where I know everybody is just, like, because, I mean, didn't they say, like, there's, I guess it was the car chase, technically, that was, like, the most viewed thing on TV, like, news.
Well, even the trial, like, yeah. this is a big deal. It was yeah. televised. This is one of the biggest trials in America.
Yeah.
In February of 1997, so we're moving forward a few years. He has gone to a civil trial now at
Correct.
This point, where both Ron Goldman's family and Nicole Brown's family have taken him to civil court to say you're responsible for their death.
Correct.
Deaths. The jury comes back from the civil trial and finds O.J. Simpson liable for the death of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. The jury awarded compensatory damages totaling $33.5 million to the plaintiffs, with $8.5 million allocated to Nicole's estate and $25 million to Goldman, to wow. Ronald Goldman's family. O.J. Simpson's team did appeal this verdict, but the judge was against him and upheld the verdict.
Did they actually get their money?
No, unfortunately not. So despite the judgment against him, O.J. was only able to pay a fraction of the damages.
What a prick.
And the families agree instead to split the proceeds from an auction of O.J. Simpson's memorabilia and personal belongings, including his Heisman Trophy, and this only amounted to about $400,000.
I'm surprised. I thought people would take more. Like, would want more of his stuff to be able to say they owned it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
That's wild.
I don't know.
That's sad.
I'm going to go through a few more things before wrapping this up. But in September of 2000, O.J. Simpson's girlfriend at the time, Christine Prati, calls the police alleging that O.J. Simpson had broken into her home. No charges are filed, and it would be one of four such times that police are dispatched to the home to handle a domestic incident between the couple. This is in Miami.
Yeah.
When he meets her, it's in 1995. Guess how old she is.
I mean, if it's probably gross, like, she's probably like 21.
She's 19.
She's 19.
Like a cocktail waitress, yeah.
She's 19 and he's how old then? In his, what, 50s, 60s?
He had to be in his
50s, right?
She would later come out in defense of him and say, like, he never hurt her, all of these things. There's also a famous call of, I'm not going to get totally into their story, but basically there's a famous call where O.J. Simpson calls police and says that he's trying to get someone admitted to a rehab, that they had been on a cocaine binger for 2 days. Mm-hmm. And it's never confirmed that it was about her, but it's widely thought that it was.
Right.
Now, September 13th, 2007, O.J. Simpson becomes aware of someone selling memorabilia, his memorabilia.
Okay.
And he comes to this information through another dealer named Tom Riccio. The dealer who's allegedly selling his stuff, Alfred Beardsley, close enough, owned a substantial amount of O.J. Simpson memorabilia. And O.J. says that this was stolen from him.
Mm, right.
Which, obviously, we know wasn't, because he had to
auction it.
Sell it. All right. Well, O.J. and Tom Riccio then decided to confront Alfred Beardsley about the situation and conspired to make a plan. They come up with this plan, and on the night of September 13, 2007, Tom Riccio and Beardsley met with another dealer named Bruce Fremont, who was in possession of other items, and they're all at the Palace Station Hotel in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Bruce was informed by Alfred that a client was looking to purchase O.J. Simpson memorabilia, but wasn't made aware that the client was O.J. Simpson himself. So basically, they're setting him up.
Setting up
who? Alfred.
Yes.
Beardsley.
Okay.
Upon arrival, O.J. Sorry, they're setting up Bruce.
Because Bruce is the one that has the potential.
I mean, Alfred is now helping them set up Bruce.
Right.
Alfred is helping Tom and OJ.
Okay.
Upon arrival, OJ and his associates ordered that nobody in the room is allowed to leave. This incident was described as a military invasion in court testimonies, and OJ Simpson began questioning Beardsley about where the memorabilia came from, and this leads to a gun being pulled.
Right.
This all goes to trial, and he is officially sentenced in 2008 to a maximum of 33 years in prison, O.J. Simpson is.
For what?
For robbery, kidnapping.
Okay.
And he is paroled after 9 years in 2017 at the age of 70.
Which I knew he got paroled, I feel like, really early.
Is pretty early, 9 years out of 33.
Yeah. Like, I feel like... Of course. And then he died.
Right. Now, this isn't talked about a lot because, well, you'll see why. But in 1998, so eventually O.J. Simpson's house is demolished.
Yeah.
In 1998, a construction worker finds a knife near the property of O.J. Simpson.
Oh, shit.
He turns this over to police.
Yeah.
A police officer who's, like, working nearby.
Yeah.
But instead of turning this in, the police officer keeps it as a souvenir until 2016, which is when they do testing on it and say, well, there's no link to the case of Nicole and Ron. But it's like, yeah, no shit, because it's at that point been
how many
almost
years?
20 years.
What the? That's such like a God.
Also, going back to OJ Simpson's age really quick, 1995 to 2024 is 30 years. My bad. 95, 2005, 2015.
Oh my gosh. Math so is hard.
It's like 29 years.
That's disgusting.
So he would have been in his 40s.
Still gross though.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just was like,
some like Leonardo DiCaprio shit.
Literally, the math ain't mathing. But just the whole thing is very sad. I think it's really sad that they never really got into, and maybe they did in the trial. Maybe it's just not.
Didn't he write a book about like,
if I did it?
Yeah. What a.
He did write a book, and there's supposed to be a show with it. And this was with an author who was at HarperCollins at the time. And I don't know the exact dates, but basically there was so much backlash that the show was scrapped, and then the author was fired from HarperCollins.
Here's my thing. In general, I'm under the notion that he did it.
I agree.
I think that the prosecution fucked up. I think that the defense was very good at their jobs. And I think that everybody who's saying that OJ has died and good riddance, blah, 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 karma, you know, I sort of get it.
Right. I definitely do. And I just think it's really sad because it really turned into him and
not about her.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like there are still two people that
were brutally murdered.
Right. Had been killed. I think overall it's just really sad.
It is. It's very sad. And I think that, have you watched The People versus OJ?
No.
I want to watch it.
But I hear that's amazing.
We should watch it.
Yeah.
I think it, maybe it'll have to be a part two to this.
Yeah.
You know, okay, wait, I had one thing I wanted to say at the end, which I guess I should have said earlier, because now we're like, I don't know. Oh my God, I'm all over the place. Blah, 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 blah. We've been recording for too long. Okay.
Okay.
So this is just sort of like a lighter note, I guess, of okay. the situation. So my friend graduated high school in 1994. Okay. And he was telling me that he said that OJ was an asshole because one, he's a murderer, but two, he ruined his high school graduation. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, we had our graduation party. So he was, the way his school had done this is that like you do a graduation, it's like a day of celebration type thing.
Yeah.
Where your families are there, you're at the school, it's a whole thing. He was graduating high school and it was the same time as the car chase.
Oh, no.
And so instead of everyone celebrating the graduation, they all stood around the giant TVs and watched the Bronco, the white Bronco chase. And he goes, OJ ruined my graduation. And I felt like you needed to know that.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious our viewpoints on what happened here. And I think that you did a good job of providing a little bit more context as to her and
Ron Goldman.
Ron's, yeah, like how they played a part in this. And I really think it's interesting to see how the prosecution did their thing and the defense did theirs.
I do think that the prosecution was too arrogant, that they thought that they had him, and that's really why the case was fumbled.
Yeah. I mean, it's reasonable doubt. That's all you need.
They really, like, didn't account for how much people liked OJ. And that,
yeah, which is so weird.
Really big.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, parasocial relationships, I need good research on that.
Right? Ugh. So anyways, if you made it this far, thank you. If you want to leave us a review, please, please, please give us some stars on Spotify or a review on Apple Podcasts.
Yep.
We are on most social media, so feel free to give us a follow. Our tag is at WaitForRealPod, P-O-D. If you want to send us a story, send us some hate mail, send us a story about OJ Simpson, feel free at our email, which is waitforrealpod@gmail.com. And Katie and I are also on our socials. We're not great at them, but we'll check them. So if you want to send us a message, please feel free to do so.
Please do.
Is there anything else we need to cover for today?
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll leave it as usual.
Go to therapy.
And don't forget to leave the lights on.